Democracy in action today at the Wisconsin State Capitol. This is the day we learn the rest of Governor Scott Walker's plan to solve the state's budget deficit. Hello, I'm Frederica Freiber from Wisconsin Public Television.
And I'm Sean Johnson from Wisconsin Public Radio. Governor Walker's budget is expected to include deep cuts to schools and local governments to help solve a $3.6 billion shortfall.
That's right. Now, Governor Walker has already put together his budget repair bill, which of course has sparked protests for the past 2 weeks outside and inside this Capitol. That budget repair bill sent Democrats out of state, delaying that process. All of these protests and demonstrations having mostly to do with the stripping of most collective bargaining for public employees. Now, we should tell you at this point, as part of disclosure, that we here at Wisconsin Public Television and Wisconsin Public Radio are public employees.
And that budget repair bill has just set off a much different atmosphere than usual at the Capitol today for this budget address. You have a very heavy police presence in the building. You have restricted access to the building. You have protesters outside wanting to get into the building. And in related news today, there was a Dane County judge issued an order telling the Department of Administration to open up access to the Capitol building. The DOA said that it was, in fact, in compliance with the court's order. So some differing interpretations of the security access there. But clearly a much different atmosphere than usual for this budget address. And just for the Capitol in general, this is normally a very open Capitol building. Not the case today.
And you may or may not be able to hear, as we're on the air, the sounds of the demonstrators outside of the building. They are kind of flanking the sides of the state assembly chamber here, where some members sit waiting for the governor to come in and give his biennial budget address. But again, there are protesters in some number outside the assembly, outside the Capitol, along the steps. Now, in terms of the budget repair bill that has caused all of this turmoil here at the Capitol, Governor Walker has put in that bill that collective bargaining for everything but small salary increases should be removed. And the protesters here believe that that strips them of their freedoms. The governor says that it gives flexibility to local units of government to withstand the cuts that are coming to schools and to shared revenue, that being local units of government, in his biennial budget, because that flexibility would represent contributions on the part of public workers to their health care costs and to their pensions. It's an effective kind of take-home pay cut of about 8%. But again, the real issue here for these demonstrators has to do with the stripping of collective bargaining rights.
And you mentioned the cuts to schools and local governments. That is one area where the governor has been fairly frank in speaking about his upcoming budget here. He said that it will include deep cuts to schools. And as those now become public and the reality becomes clear to many school districts around the state, that they're going to see cuts like they've never seen before. You know, one wonders what happens to these protests if they fade away or if other protests sort of fold into them.
Of note, we should remark that state Republican senates have entered the chamber now, and Dale Schultz was shaking hands with various members of the legislature as they make their way in. Again, notably, 14 Senate Democrats are absent. As far as we know, they are still out of state. We obviously have been watching and listening to make sure that one Senate Democrat has not returned, because the budget repair bill is stopped down because that body, the Senate, cannot proceed without at least one Senate Democrat returning to this state to take up that business.
Assembly Democrats are in the chamber today, and you can tell because they're always wearing orange shirts now to denote themselves. It says support working families, something along those lines on the shirt. But they're greatly outnumbered by legislative majorities, as Republican majorities in the Assembly and the Senate. once the Senate comes back, if you, you know, if you assume that eventually they will come back, the Republicans have the numbers they need to pass what the governor puts out there for them. And at least in terms of the budget repair bill, they've given every public indication that, that they will pass it when they get the chance.
And that does bring up, as you hear the protesters outside this Capitol, what will happen then? When this passes, the very parts of it that have these protests ongoing, what will be the reaction then?
And, you know, what happens as different elements of this budget proposal that the governor's laying out today, what's going to be the response in communities that just haven't been used to this type of cutbacks before, even in the last state budget, when there was a cut to school aid for the first time in decades. It was a smaller cut than what you've seen or what you'll see in this budget. And this is something that schools, are, even if it's not as a percentage as big as some other areas of the budget, it's a cut to an area of the budget that people have gotten used to being protected.
And we should say that we have had an opportunity to look over what's called the budget in brief ahead of the governor's address here today. And just under $800 million is coming out of K-12 over the 2 years of this budget. And another cut in per pupil funding of about $550 on average across the state of Wisconsin. And again, the governor had hoped that the flexibility that he was looking for in terms of contributions to health care and pension on the part of teachers would help offset these cuts. However, we do understand that Superintendent Tony Evers believes these cuts to be steep and deep and painful to the schools across this state.
And one of the questions that maybe isn't necessarily answered today is what will the state do with its Medicaid budget that covers the programs ranging from BadgerCare Plus, affects more than a million residents. The administration says there's no steep drop in enrollment for those programs.
They do, however, say that they're taking $500 million out.
They're $500 million out, and so the question is, how do you do that? And it was somewhat of a mystery under the last administration, the Doyle administration, too, in the last budget. Certainly, you know, that's something that we'll have to watch for today and over the next couple of years under the Walker administration.
And also there are the provisions in this budget splitting the UW-Madison off from the rest of the system and taking 17,000 UW-Madison employees off the state's books and then allowing the UW-Madison to determine what it will do in terms of tuition and salaries for some of its, quote, star faculty. We should tell you that Governor Scott Walker is preparing now to walk into the chambers. He is in where we are, the assembly parlor, and he will be making his way into the chambers very shortly. But this University of Wisconsin system and UW-Madison kind of spinoff is really an interesting piece of this budget, and I guess we won't know until we see the specific details of that Badger Partnership Plan exactly what that does.
Right, and it's an idea that in principle has the backing of UW-Madison's Chancellor, Betty Martin, who wants to have the flexibility to offer professors and staff there salaries that are in line with what they could get at other institutions, other peer institutions. So you've got an interesting meeting of the minds there between the governor, who's looking to find savings in this budget, and the chancellor, who's looking to find a way to pay faculty more.
Just how the rest of the system, the university system, feels and responds to that, however, in the biennial budget, will be expressed, no doubt, very shortly and in the coming days. There is a provision in here, though, also to give UW-Milwaukee the same ability to spin off under its own public authority.
And we should mention, tucked into there is a cut in state spending for the UW-Madison, for the UW system. So as part of this new relationship, there are fewer dollars coming into the system and then Madison as a whole. State Assembly, shaking hands with legislators. A quick trip here, he's moving to the podium to give his first budget address. I think we would have said a month ago that this will be by far the biggest bill he introduces in the legislature, but after the budget repair bill he introduces, who knows, maybe it's a close second. Two very big pieces of legislation here from the governor early in this term.
Very unusual circumstances, to be sure. Governor Scott Walker.
Introduce who used to be the youngest governor, now is the oldest. My friend Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin.
Thank you. Thank you, Speaker Fitzgerald, Speaker Pro Tem Cramer, President Ellis, Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Minority Leader Mbarka, Supreme Court Justices, Constitutional Officers, Tribal Leaders, Members of the Cabinet, Distinguished Guests, Members of the Wisconsin State Legislature, and most importantly, fellow citizens of Wisconsin. Each and every one of us gathered in this chamber today holds a diverse set of beliefs, beliefs that we are passionate about sharing and that serve to guide our actions. Each of us has a vision for a better tomorrow in Wisconsin. But we all share something in common, an unrivaled passion for this state and the people who call it home. We all want Wisconsin to be the very best that it can be. Yet because our experiences are unique, and our beliefs diverse, our paths sometimes diverge as we tackle today's challenges. But even at the height of our differences, we can and must keep our promise to the people of Wisconsin that they will always come first. Democracy does not just expect differences, it demands them. It's the matter in which we discuss and resolve those differences that leads to both bold solutions and innovative reforms. I ask that we continue to be mindful of our differences, as well as our similarities in the coming days, weeks, and months. Above all, let us not lose sight of the fact that we were each elected to represent the people of this state by participating in our democratic process. I applaud the State Assembly and those in the State Senate who are in this chamber today for not losing sight of that. Over the past few weeks, a great deal of attention has been focused on Wisconsin. And you know, that's okay. Because freedom thrives each time there is a passionate debate in our society. Passion and civility can go hand in hand, and that's what's on display here in Wisconsin. But outside observers need to know that there is more to this state as well. Wisconsin is filled with outstanding workers and multi-generational employers. We have tremendous resources and amazing attractions. Most importantly, we have decent people in this state. The good people of this state come from all walks of life, young and old, urban and rural, Democrat and Republican. Recently, I learned of yet another story that affirms that sense of decency. Some of our state employees at the Farm Center spent time with two brothers who jointly operate a dairy farm that was, well, literally on the verge of financial collapse. One of the brothers was so stressed that he was considering some horrible options. The Farm Center staff calmly walked the brothers through a variety of options and got them through their immediate crisis. That day, our public employees not only helped someone's life, they may have actually saved someone's life. This story says a lot about the people of Wisconsin. It certainly reinforces the financial strain that so many are experiencing across the state. Without a doubt, it shows the compassion of our people towards their fellow citizens. And it shows the professionalism of our public employees who really do care about the people that they serve. This is why we need to move this process forward and get this state working again. I have been asked a lot over the past few weeks, what happens next? Well, I'm an optimist. I believe that after our budget repair bill passes, tempers will cool, and we will find a way to continue to work together to help grow our economy. We will position Wisconsin to emerge from this economic downturn stronger than ever, with new opportunities for our workers and our families. You see, for 6 weeks, we worked together to pass bill after bill to show that Wisconsin is open for business. Most of our legislation received bipartisan support. It is my belief that we will soon get back to that type of cooperation here in the Capitol. We introduced a budget repair bill that is the first step towards addressing the long-term challenges facing our state while laying the foundation for economic growth. The biennial budget I introduced today is built on the savings supplied by our budget repair bill. Legislation, I might add, that we have already modified to address concerns expressed at the public hearing. We need the savings in the budget repair bill because Wisconsin faces a $3.6 billion deficit. Too many politicians have failed to tell the truth about our financial crisis. They left Wisconsinites in the dark about the extent of our fiscal problems. The facts are clear. Wisconsin is broke, and it's time to start paying our bills today so our kids are not stuck with even bigger bills tomorrow. This deficit did not appear overnight. Wisconsin got here through a reliance on one-time fixes, accounting gimmicks, and tax increases. Previous governors and legislators from both political parties took money from our tobacco settlement. They raided more than $1 billion from the transportation fund and $200 million from the patient's compensation fund. They increased taxes on the sick and set up shell games to draw down additional funds. They relied on one-time federal stimulus dollars as if the money would be there forever, but it's already gone. Wisconsin owes Minnesota nearly $60 million and some $200 million to the patient's compensation fund. In short, they govern for the short term with an eye only on the next election, not the next generation. While families across the state were focused on making ends meet, the state government continued to grow well beyond our taxpayers' ability to pay. But the time has come for us to make the tough decisions necessary to put our state back on the path to prosperity. We must work together to bring our spending in line with reality. We were elected not to make the easy decisions to benefit ourselves, but to make the difficult ones that will benefit our children and our grandchildren. We need a commitment to the future so our children don't face even more dire consequences than what we face today. To Together, we will change the way government works in Wisconsin. We will make it work for the people once again. I've often repeated references to our state's constitutional lesson that it is through frugality and moderation in government that we will see freedom and prosperity for our people. Our budget holds true to these principles by balancing the $3.6 billion deficit through permanent spending reductions and innovative government reforms. Specifically, our budget reduces all fund spending by $4.2 billion, or 6.7%, and decreases the structural deficit by 90%, from $2.5 billion to $250 million, the lowest structural deficit in recent history. That's over $2 billion we are saving from future obligations and for future generations. That's worth repeating. Our budget reduces the structural deficit by 90%. In fact, it is lower than the last eight budgets presented by Democrats and Republicans alike. Gone are the segregated fund raids, illegal transfers, and accounting gimmicks. Gone are the tax or fee increases. Our state cannot grow if our people are weighed down paying for a larger and larger government, a government that pays its workers unsustainable benefits that are out of line with the private sector. We need a leaner and cleaner state government. As we decrease state spending, we also increase flexibility, so local government and state government have the tools to deal with the reduced revenue. It's true, we are reducing aid to local governments by just over $1.25 billion, but we're also providing almost $1.5 billion in savings through our budget repair bill. If the 14 Senate Democrats do not come home, their local communities will be forced to manage these reductions in aid without the benefit of the tools provided in the repair bill. On the other hand, if the Senate Democrats do come home, local units of government overall will actually see a net increase in revenue plus savings of more than $150 million. Let me repeat that. Despite the reductions in our budget, local governments would gain $150 million overall in the next biennium, but only if the Senate is allowed to act. While aid to local government represents the state's largest expenditure, the state's Medicaid program represents the area of fastest growth. Medicaid costs continue to outstrip growth in general fund revenues. Long-term care expenditures, in particular, are growing much faster than other parts of the budget. Coupled with the use of $1.2 billion in one-time federal funding, the state is facing an unsustainable budget challenge, a challenge in need of a serious and long-term solution. While maintaining services for our most vulnerable, we must also refocus those services and find efficiencies where possible. That will mean asking some individuals to pay modest copays and premiums as they transition from the safety net that these programs provide to gainful employment. This will allow those individuals to begin to transition to a time in the future where they no longer need government support while protecting those who need those services the most. Just as we reform our entitlement programs for the 21st century, we must also reform our education system. Clearly, we have to produce graduates who are able to compete, not only with their peers from Chicago or Des Moines, but also from Shanghai or Sydney. And we must do so while we balance a $3.6 billion deficit. That is why, even as we reduce school aids, overall, we give schools across the state the tools to make up for those reductions with even greater savings through the budget repair bill. Again, This is why it's so vitally important for the Senate Democrats to come back home and do their jobs. If they do not, our schools face massive layoffs of teachers. However, if they do come back, overall savings for schools across the state will outweigh reductions, ultimately allowing schools to put more money directly into the classroom. When I campaigned for governor, I set out a goal that all Wisconsin third graders should be ready to learn at the third grade level. Many have noted that from kindergarten to third grade, our kids learn to read. And then from third grade on, they use reading to learn. We need to make sure that every child can read as they move on from third grade. That's why my budget creates a third grade reading initiative that will require all third graders to achieve basic literacy. I know we can do this, and we owe it to our students to make sure we do. In addition, we will expand choice and charter programs to ensure that every kid gets a great education, no matter what zip code they live in. We lift the cap on the number of students eligible to participate in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program and phase out the income eligibility limits. And across the state, we allow any University of Wisconsin system four-year campus to create a charter school. Competing globally also means enhancing higher education. To do this, we will give our flagship, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the tools it needs to remain a world-class leader in research and instruction, while continuing to be a driver of economic development for our state. This is a decision that we discussed at great length with Chancellor Biddy Martin and the leadership at the UW. For the past several years, she and other University of Wisconsin leaders have pushed for greater flexibility. Now they will have it, and soon the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee will as well. Throughout the budget process, I am open to working with lawmakers from both political parties on expanding this concept to other campuses throughout the University of Wisconsin system. A few weeks ago, I met with all the UW chancellors and expressed my willingness to work with them and the members of the legislature to improve our higher education system. We also remain committed to keeping our university system accessible to every Wisconsin student, regardless of financial resources. That's why, even in these tough fiscal times, we maintain our commitment to the state's financial aid program. Plus, we maintain the state's tuition reimbursement for our veterans. As we refocus government, public safety remains a priority. Our budget will restore truth in sentencing by repealing the early release program approved by the last administration. We will provide additional resources and positions in our DNA lab to assist our criminal investigations. And we will make sure that our children, those that are dearest to us, are protected from those who would do them harm. We provide additional resources to investigate online predators targeting our children. The state currently has over 20,000 IP addresses of people who prey on our children, but we don't have the resources to track those criminals down. Now we will. We are proud of the leadership being provided in this area by our Attorney General, J.B. Van Hollen, and I am thankful that even with a tough budget, we can find resources to protect our kids. This is a reform budget. It's about getting Wisconsin working again. And to make that happen, we need a balanced budget that works and an environment where the private sector can create 250,000 jobs over the next 4 years. During our special session on jobs, we created a public-private agency, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, that will focus solely on job creation. Our budget includes the resources and the organization to get the WEDC working to stimulate our economy. Working hand in hand with our new public-private efforts at the state level are seven regional economic development efforts around the state. In this budget, these regional economic drivers continue to receive financial support as they collaborate to get their regions and our state growing again. Our budget also recognizes the important role that transportation plays in economic development. In order to grow, we need to move goods and people in a cost-effective and timely manner. That is why our budget ends the raid on the transportation fund and includes a total investment of $5.7 billion in our state's transportation system. That's money that will create jobs now and in the future. Included in our budget is funding for the accelerated reconstruction of the Zoo Interchange, which actually saves us $600 million from the original plans, and additional funding to continue construction of the I-94 corridor. It also includes major investments in our transportation system all across the state of Wisconsin. We will also encourage job growth as I fulfill a campaign promise to lower taxes on those who invest in Wisconsin-based businesses and do so for an extended period of time. We will do this by eliminating the capital gains tax for investors in Wisconsin companies that provide jobs for our people. And we will include tax relief for employers who hire more people to work in our state. In this budget, we provide real tax relief for homeowners across the state by implementing property tax reform that locks in property tax levies at the local level. Time and time again, I've heard from Wisconsinites who are doing more with less and making sacrifices to keep their families going. Good people, like the retired couple on a fixed income, or the new parents paying for daycare and a mortgage on their first house, or the middle-class working family where mom and dad still have jobs, but keeping them meant taking a pay freeze. All of them, and others like them all across Wisconsin, need true property tax relief, and this budget delivers. I campaigned on creating an environment where the private sector can create 250,000 jobs over the next 4 years. Our budget lays that foundation by freeing taxpayers to create jobs in the private sector, by limiting the size and scope of government, and by focusing our government on meeting core priorities. Where we must make reductions, we do so wisely by giving local government the tools to save even more money than the overall reductions in state aid. As I've said before, our Constitution says the blessings of a free government can only be maintained by a firm adherence to justice, moderation, temperance, frugality, and virtue. This is the heart of our budget. We are returning to frugality and making the long-term decisions to balance our budget now and, more importantly, into the future. We will do the heavy lifting to protect our children and grandchildren from having to make the hard decisions that were once avoided. I know that things will get better. Back in the 1980s, when I was growing up in the small town of Delavan, we faced similar circumstances in this state. A tough economy and a tight budget were the top issues 25 years ago. Tommy Thompson brought into office bold new ideas and strong leadership. At the time, defenders of the status quo took offense. But by the end of his first term, those reforms helped balance the budget, and those policies helped the private sector create 258,000 new jobs. I remember Governor Thompson's optimism and the excitement he created when we turned our state around back then. If we did it a generation ago, we can do it again today. Do it. This budget is about our commitment to the future. Like every parent and grandparent in this state, I want my two sons to grow up in a Wisconsin at least as great as the Wisconsin I grew up in. Working together, I know we can do it. Thank you. May God bless you and your family, and may God continue to bless the great state of Wisconsin.
Scott Walker concludes his budget address in these quite unusual circumstances, with protesters outside the Capitol walls, frankly, calling for his recall rather loudly. But we are joined here in the assembly parlor as the governor makes his way out under very tight security here. We are joined by Todd Barry, who is the president of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. He's a numbers guy, and he can help us kind of go through this biennial budget and parse out the numbers. Todd, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Andrew.
Well, I wanted to ask you what the big budget story is with this two-year budget.
Sure. Well, I think to most people it probably would be the school aid cuts and the local government cuts. What I'm struck by is how this budget responds to the past in some respects, in that we've had a decade of rapid growth in Medicaid, and the Medicaid growth, a lot of borrowing in the last 10 years, and debt service in this budget, because of all that past borrowing, to balance budgets ostensibly, will be the third largest program in the GPR budget.
And so there is no money, as he says, to do anything with.
There really isn't. Once he said that he wasn't going to increase taxes, and he wasn't budget tricks, and given the problems that were brought over from the last budget, you really don't have any options.
Let's get into that a little bit more, though, because for schools, which is, takes up the biggest piece of the budget, and that it's a piece of the budget that a lot of people are going to notice. If you look at it through the lens of cutting the state's budget, you have to go there. But he includes something in there, a 5.5% reduction in school district revenue limits.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't address the state deficit. That's different,
no.
Right?
And it's because of the way the school revenue limits are, and that is when you reduce aid, local districts can backfill with property taxes. And when the last governor and legislature cut school aids, they tightened down the revenue cap so property taxes couldn't go up as much. And that's what's going on again here. The aid cuts are bigger, and the revenue cap is being tightened even more. And so what that means for school districts is they have less state aid, one kind of revenue, and they probably have no more, and perhaps less property taxes as well. So they're going to be living with last year's revenue for sure.
So the question is, I think, at this point, in terms of school aids and what schools have to work with, do the so-called flexibilities mm-hmm. that the governor is interested in imposing in his budget repair bill at that level offset these cuts?
His budget materials say yes, that the offsets are more than the cuts. The problem is that, and this has been the debate about bargaining, he can't control what goes on at the local level in terms of compensation or contracts or anything. So how much of these savings will actually accrue to local government officials is somewhat up to what local government does.
And some districts are choosing right now to reach new contracts right. with their unions. That's a two-sided deal. The unions and the districts have decided we're going to be under contract for, you know, another couple of years, another few years. It'll affect them differently, right?
No, there have been, you know, county and municipal and school settlements where they decided to preserve no contribution to retirement and little or no contribution to health care. And that, ironically, will make it harder for the school district administrator and board and may increase, all other things being equal, layoffs.
What about, as long as we're talking about local government, what about shared revenue mm-hmm. and the kind of aid to local municipalities and counties? We see a $96 million cut mm-hmm. over the 2012 calendar year.
Yeah. The shared revenue story is one that now is in about its 15th to 20th year, and that is ever since the state decided to start boosting aid to public schools, the shared revenue appropriation has been either frozen or cut by every governor. And so the appropriation hasn't seen any growth and has seen multiple cuts. It was cut last budget under Governor Doyle. It's being cut again now.
And they actually, the administration actually split that out and said counties in particular are going to see something like a 50% reduction. What is that? How do they cope with something like that?
I guess we'll have to wait and see. I'm not sure. There are multiple ways that the state aids counties, partly through shared revenues, but partly through other things such as community aids. It's possible that there's money moving between programs.
Let's talk about Medicaid, obviously mm-hmm. a huge driver of this deficit. $500 million being cut out of that program and the administration is going to try for federal waivers mm-hmm. to change eligibility rules and whatnot. But what about those cuts? Do you think those will affect the enrollees, the people on these programs?
Sure. Well, that depends on how they exercise whatever authority they may get under the budget repair bill. But it's important to also remember that when all is said and done, the appropriation that will grow the most by about $1 billion is Medicaid, while, you know, pretty much everything else is cut, except for debt service. Medicaid is growing.
Why is debt service growing here in this band? You've got a governor that, you know, Republicans have pretty consistently said they don't like credit card budgeting, mm-hmm. that it's kicking the can down the road. When you rely on debt service, prevents more painful cuts in the short term, but it's very much kicking the can down the road, is it not?
Yes. And that is one of the ways that budgets were balanced over the last decade. I think what the administration would argue is they inherited some of these increased debt responsibilities, although the budget repair bill does have a debt restructuring, not a huge one, but one, and it does, in effect, create some more debt service in the year after the restructuring.
It should be noted that Governor Walker says that this budget decreases the structural deficit by 90%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Their table shows that, and I think about this not on a two-year basis, but on a one-year basis, but it shows that we came into what will be this coming year with a structural problem of between $1 and $1.5 billion, and by their numbers, it probably is between $100 and $200 million. You have to give credit where credit is due. I tend to look at those kinds of things to see how the underlying budget works, and that the structural problem is down is good, that the debt service is up is not good, that the balances in the budget are small is continuation of what we've done for a long time. So
And from a governor that, at least early in his campaign, talked about wanting to cut taxes, certainly still wants to do it at some point in his first 4 years. What do you see from him in this budget as far as tax relief? I mean, does it reflect sort of the fiscal realities that he faced once
again? I think it does. It does represent the fiscal realities. The tax cuts obviously came in the January session. Those bills, in terms of fiscal impact, were not huge. I mean, people can debate it, but in terms of impact, they were not huge. And you can't say that there's any really major tax law changes in this budget. There are some things being done, for instance, to the earned income tax credit and the homestead credit program that will raise a few eyebrows, perhaps. There's a tweaking of the corporate income tax. In some respects, to fix something with combined reporting that went on last budget. But really, there's no major tax reform in here. It's sort of status quo because there's no money.
Well, we will have plenty more to talk about on this budget and the repair bill budget and what's going on with the missing Senate Democrats and the protests as they persist here at the state capitol. But, Todd, we want to thank you for your expertise on this. And we at Wisconsin Public Television will be following, of course, the budget as it proceeds along in the process. And you can tune in at 7:30 on Friday for Here and Now for more detail on that.
And you can listen to Wisconsin Public Radio this afternoon and tomorrow morning for continuing coverage of the governor's budget. I'm Sean Johnson for Wisconsin Public Radio.
And I'm Frederica Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television. Thank you for joining us.